Hi, guys. Welcome to the Cloud Computing Weekly Podcast, your one stop for news, information, and expert advice around the emerging world of cloud computing. This podcast is brought to you by Cloud Technology Partners in partnership with our host, TechTarget. This is episode 6767. My name is Dave Linthicum, Cloud Computing SME, author, speaker, B-List Geek, and with the firm Cloud Technology Partners. And joining me is our special guest, Vishwas Lele. Did I pronounce that right?
Yes, David.
Cool. And tell us a bit about yourself and what you're currently working on and also what you're working on as related to cloud computing.
Sure. Thank you for having me on the show, David. My name is Vishwas Lele, and I'm CTO for a company which is based in Virginia, Reston, Virginia, called Applied Information Sciences, where I've worked for the last 22 years almost. And I've spent about last 7 years or so working on cloud technologies. So taking our customers, we are a system integrator. We work both in the federal space as well as the commercial space. And we have taken a lot of our customers to the cloud, move their existing applications to the cloud, or design new applications to run in the cloud.
Cool. And you've worked there for a tremendously long time. I remember it was taken back by the normal bios I see. People have a list of like 20 companies they work for in the last 20 years, but that wasn't the case with you. You kind of stuck with it, didn't you?
Yes, David. That is a question that I get often, and it certainly seems like a long time, 22 years. But fortunately, I work within a group, within the Applied Information Sciences company. I work within a group called the Corporate Technology Group, which is sort of, think of it as a core technology group. And our focus has been always to look at what is coming out next and, you know, look at it, understand it, and see if we can meaningfully take it to our customers. So even though it is a long span of time, this position or this group has given me the ability to constantly look for what is coming out next. And so it seems like, so cloud computing was about 6 or 7 years to start, got interested in this. And then, of course, you know, a lot of interest lately. But before that, it was similar technologies, trying to understand them. And David, we are a small company. Well, small is a relative term. We have about 300 odd consultants or 350 consultants. But for us, it is important to constantly be thinking about what is next and before we get commoditized. So we are constantly looking for that. So 22 years don't seem that long.
Yeah, so you're looking at, I guess you're probably looking at cloud, but cloud's getting a little old, to be honest with you. But we now have Internet of Things, we now have DevOps, we now have any number of technologies that are starting to appear on the radar screen that are interesting to me. I mean, machine learning is something that excites me, utilization for big data predictive analytics. Anything on your radar screen that we should be tracking?
Absolutely. David, you're right. I think the core understanding of cloud is getting a bit old, but as you said, most people are now looking at the cloud, and you know, DevOps is certainly very important. My area of interest in the last couple of years has been a lot around machine learning. I'm glad you said that. And specifically, I've been focused on, as a software developer, I'm looking at machine learning as what is the role machine learning can play in software engineering. In fact, I was just did a talk recently, David, if you allow me to just in 30 seconds describe that. It was about machine learning applied to software engineering. And just to be clear, I was not talking about how software developers can learn machine learning. I was taking machine learning and applying it to software engineering. So things like inductive programming. You know, there's a great feature in Excel called flash fill. You show it a couple of things and it induces a program for you. And the other interesting thing we tried to do with that was, let's say you have a piece of COBOL code, really old legacy code that nobody wants to touch. It works fine, but nobody wants to touch. So you can maybe call it 500,000 times or 1,000,000 times or some large number of times, and maybe record the input output action and maybe feed it to some kind of a machine learning algorithm. And then now the machine learning algorithm is trained to understand what this legacy routine can do. And if you can't replace it, you can at least reverse engineer some parts of that existing code. So there are some interesting examples of how machine learning can certainly enable you as a software engineer.
Yeah, I think as our DevOps automated processing becomes better, I think the ability to kind of integrate machine learning, you know, into the process. You know, there's a lot of things we can automate and there's some things that we can't, but the things we can automate are because there needs to be some sort of creative thinking process that stands in the way or is part of that DevOps process or DevOps tooling. And it seems to me machine learning can do what you just described, the ability to understand the features and functions of an application and actually re-engineer them, you know, into something a bit more modern, perhaps ability to find APIs or API-enable legacy systems so we can access the value, if not completely redoing them, without trying to reinvent the wheel and, you know, building the thing from ground up, which is incredibly expensive and takes a lot of time. So it's good thinking. I guess the issue comes in, it's always harder to do in practice than it is to do in a presentation. And ultimately, you have to, there's a lot of hindrances and a lot of things that kind of stand in the way, but a lot of those obstacles are falling down.
That is true. And, you know, as you mentioned, David, that, you know, DevOps is all about automation and things like that. As people have automated a number of their islands of automation that existed, the next frontier it almost is that can we apply things like the predictive analytics to doing, you know, you're running a large application, you know, most people are collecting a lot of data about their applications. Can they detect some anomaly and maybe take that server out of rotation? So those kinds of things are certainly important. Another area of interest has been, you know, if you look at a lot of data that your organization may have collected or a public data set about certain propensity for bugs in a certain style of code, maybe you can do some predictions there. So there are some great examples there. But I think the example that interests me most is, you know, reuse has been a holy grail of software development, of course, and, you know, we have gotten better over the years. But sort of machine learning and the ability to, and certainly Microsoft is doing that, Amazon is doing that, and Google made an announcement, big announcement lately, making these high quality algorithms available to us as software developers, and then software developers using them. And anyway, we are in a polyglot world where we are using different programming languages. So why not use some of these algorithms to, you know, expedite the development of programs? And I think as software engineers, even if we don't get to the down deep math, which is sort of the domain of data scientists, but trying to understand all these algorithms that are available to us, these high quality algorithms that are available to us, and then use them, I think to me is the most interesting part in the next 2, 3, 4 years.
Yeah, the ability to share algorithms across problem domains. I remember there was an engineering project I was working on for a big retailer, and we were actually creating an algorithm server where it would be able to find the best algorithm for the particular processing. In this case, it was determining the profile of a customer without actually having them register, just through their behavior. And it was amazingly effective, and that you're not only, you know, finding information about bits and pieces of things, but actually making an intelligent, logical choice of something that's going to be utilized to make a decision, or perhaps several algorithms are used to make a decision, that's something that's fairly innocuous out of innocuous data points. And it worked really, really well. And I was surprised that, it certainly was something that just kind of took off like a rocket. So anyway, this month we're thrilled to announce the first print edition of the Doppler, our flagship cloud computing news and best practices publication. It's a 50-plus page exclusive cloud content, including articles with Avid CIO Jonathan Thomas and Rob Alexander, the CIO of Capital One. So that's a real magazine that comes in your real mailbox. So drop us a line there. And where do you do that? You can visit cloudtp.com/Doppler. Enter your mailing information. That's your snail mail information. We'll send you a copy free of charge. So make sure you take advantage of that. So some of the topics, some of the interesting ones this week, since it is holiday week, Christmas week, is the fact that we have a Wi-Fi enabled Barbie that has an AI backend that actually has a conversation with your kid. This seems kind of neat, but also kind of creepy to me. It's kind of a Revenge of Chucky time, you know, that this thing's going to learn too much about us and become self-aware and come kill us. Am I being too paranoid?
Yeah, but, you know, the idea, I agree with your description that this seems a bit crazy. But I think overall, the idea of smart, intelligent digital assistance is here, and we will see more and more of that. Maybe not the Barbie, and I'm not sure, quite sure if I, well, my daughters have grown up now, but I'm not quite sure I want to buy one for them. I would have bought one for them, but I am enamored with the idea of more intelligent personal digital assistants. And of course, do a lot of work on the Microsoft domain. And Cortana is one of the engines which has an extensible API. So for I guess cheap thrills, I extended the Cortana SDK last year. And now I can teach it to say, hey, go get me a virtual machine of this size. And Cortana takes my action and under the covers calls the right set of APIs, gives me Mac machine, and lets me know a few minutes later that my machine is ready for use. So as I said, cheap thrills, but I think there's a lot of potential for that combined with machine learning to make our lives easier.
Yeah, I think that's true in general, and I did blog about this today. You'll see that tomorrow on InfoWorld. But we are seeing these. It's not the matter that we can. We certainly can do that. We can attach an AI machine, and this thing communicates with a back-end system that uses one of 8,000 pre-programmed lines. So there's a Wi-Fi transmitter and receiver. All it does is communicate with the back-end cloud system. Actually, the system's called ToyTalk, which is a company unto itself that has speech recognition software. It's automated to detect your child's voice and basically respond back with something you think according to the response, like Siri. But we're getting to this stuff where we have connected egg trays, and we have Bluetooth-enabled toilets. One of the things, if you look at your Wi-Fi hub today, and you look at it in a year from now, you're going to have probably 100 devices on there. You're certainly Nest thermostats, your garage door openers, Roombas, all these sorts of things that are out there. And so the question comes in, I can see the advantage of it, but do we really need to have all these things connected to the back-end cloud systems, that are leveraging this stuff? Maybe I'm just being too skeptical. But there are some privacy issues that I think the press brought up this week. I don't really get wrapped around the axle around that. I don't think people are going to be leaking the voices. People are going to hack that ToyTalk server. But it's always a concern that we have the we have results of this that we didn't conceive of.
You're right, David. I think what is happening is, of course, IoT is an important story, and you're seeing lots and lots of use cases, people trying out just about everything. Now, would it make sense to connect every single appliance in your house in this manner? And are you willing to share all that information? I think market will shake out, and we will come up with the important use cases. Look at all the car manufacturers, all the things that are available in an automobile, and the studies and the data shows that maybe a couple of those things, for example, the blind spot detection is one of the things that has stood out and seems that everybody's willing to pay for that when it is available. But then there are hundreds of other options that people have just simply ignored or buyers have simply ignored. I was doing recently just an IoT story, which I'll just quickly narrate. I had gone down to a manufacturer, and they have connected on their shop floor a bunch of their machines. And there is an open protocol now called the MT Connect protocol, which allows you to get data from these machines. Collecting that data and feeding it to an algorithm, machine learning algorithm, and trying to determine if your machines in a large shop floor are running optimally in real time and making adjustments. I mean, that seemed like a great use case, and it seemed like all the technology pieces that were needed to enable that are quite available. So, story is important. I think this is an important area. We will see important use cases stand up, and not so important use cases sort of be forgotten by end of 2016.
Yeah, I think that's going to happen. We're going to have the silly stuff, and eventually it's going to break out. And there's cool applications for this. The ability to provide a toy to an epileptic child, so you know when there's a seizure occurring, so you're not necessarily having to monitor your kid 7 by 24. I think that's a good application for it, and just lots of things is related to health analytics and, you know, all these things that are coming up. So it's just interesting space. It just kind of struck me as funny is that we're cloud enabling these toys, and like I said, dolls are always kind of creepy to me anyway. So here's one that's even more creepy since you're able to have a conversation with it and it's able to gather information. So anyway, cloud native, the road to cloud native may start and end at Google. And this is a story by Sadar, who's a colleague with of mine at InfoWorld, and he does the TechWatch column. The Cloud Native Computing Foundation is figuring out what our container-powered app stack future looks like to Google's benefit. And the Cloud Native Foundation is a Linux Foundation group to aid in the creation of applications and services built with containers. Has ratified its governance structures. More than a pretty name, it's ready to tackle the task of creating open source hybrid clouds. So the CNCF, as we call it, can now direct technical decisions, oversee working group projects, and manage contributors to the code base. This is the last part of its critical path, since the CNCF is working models around creating code as a reference implementation for its missions rather than drafting proposals on paper, than writing software to fulfill them. So this is kind of interesting. In fact, there was some emails running around our organization as to how to really kind of take advantage of this or whether or not we should join in. But looks like it's going to be another vendor group. So the most likely technical contributors should be familiar to anyone who spent time working with containers, Google Kubernetes, container orchestration system, and the Excedra key value store created by CoreOS are two of the biggest projects to be donated to the CNCF future development. So here we go again. We're going to have another standards organization, this time, you know, working around containers, working with CoreOS and Kubernetes. I don't see Docker in there, which is would be a bit concerning. But what do you think the odds are outlook for these? Because I've seen a lot of these things start up and they just kind of fall by the wayside after a few years. And ultimately, it ends up being lots of companies with their own agendas and they never really get too much done. Is this going to be different?
David, I have to spend some more time thinking about it. It is concerning that Docker is not part of this. It seemed like, a lot of movement behind it. Certainly, if you look at some of the recent announcements, Microsoft seems to be fully in the bandwagon of Docker containers. In fact, Windows Server 2016 has Docker support. So I'll have to look at it some more deeply to comment on it. But having a consortium like this, where more companies are coming together and donating this code, I think has some ultimately promotes this cause and gives an opportunity for others to contribute and extend it. So it may be a good thing, but needs to be seen how well it does.
Yeah, it's maybe I'm overly skeptical, but I've seen, you know, a number of these things kind of pop up over the years. And they're never really empowered or basically powered by the end users, the people who are consuming containers. So it's Google and it's CoreOS that are in there now. Looks like Microsoft isn't in there. It doesn't look like Docker's in there. And, it's going to be an interesting thing to see the way this evolves. But, you know, we have gone down this road many times and it may not, be a benefit to the end users, which ultimately needs to be. It may be a benefit to the those who are in the consortium because they're using it as a marketing platform more so than anything else, and they may be able to, you know, collaborate on things and certainly do some open source releases. And it does sound like they're going to work on software versus doing PowerPoint presentations and papers, which is good. Which is always good. But I don't know, maybe I'm a little skeptical as to where these things are going to go. So it's harder to gauge how long this will take to emerge. This is according to the article, given that the CNCF has only now formally started work, but Google has sensed that the drift toward containers works in its favors as has been putting together the pieces. By the time CNCF gives a vendor-neutral container stack the thumbs up, it may already be powering Google's open hybrid cloud. So here we are. Is it going to work as fast as the vendors are able to work and we're able to get into a vendor neutral stuff? And it's never really completely vendor neutral. Obviously, if the vendors are contributing to it, they're going to have some power in there and you're going to want to move with those vendors. But, you know, the idea of open is something that the enterprises have embraced and they're more likely to procure technology this adherence to a standards organization that's, you know, run independently, like these guys are promoting, you know, versus, you know, buying something that's more proprietary in nature they may consider lock-in. I understand containers are leveraged because we're trying to avoid lock-in, but a certain amount of it can't be helped. And I think that enterprises are wary of that. And this may be a kind of a, I would say, a scam, but a approach to free up, to basically dissuade those fears. What do you think?
Yeah, so David, I mean, a number of these consortiums have come, and I think to the extent that it promotes the agenda of polycloud, there's no question that organizations have more than one cloud vendor there. And things like Docker and Kubernetes and Mesos, certainly the step in the right direction to give you this ability to move between these environments. So I think to the extent that this consortium helps, like I said, I've not spent any time in depth to look at this. You've certainly piqued my interest. I'm going to do that. But to the extent it can promote that, bring move this forward and give the end users some options, that's a good idea. But as you have correctly pointed out, it is never completely an open portable solution. Vendors do get in, and then there are changes and extensions and whatnot, which sort of limit your ability to totally go between these environments. But I'm glad that given that a poly-cloud environment is in our future, there is work to make this more interoperable.
Yeah, a lot of work, and they just started, so let's not judge them before they had a chance to put out some outputs out of this. And I like Google as an organization, and they're going to be able to promote it with some put some resources behind it because they're huge, you know, where the little organizations aren't going to be able to put as much behind it. But it is concerning that Microsoft and Docker aren't a part of it, but they could be a part of it soon. So we will monitor this and see how it goes, maybe even have some of the representatives on the podcast. So please pick up a copy of my book, Cloud Computing and Civil Convergence, which you can find in softback on Amazon as well as on the Kindle. Read my blog on InfoWorld, and don't forget to go to www.cloudtp.com for current cloud news, links to this podcast, and more ways to contact us directly. Sorry about that. Twitter, you can reach me at David Linthicum, LINTHICUM is the way you spell my last name. And where can we find you online?
Well, you can find me on Twitter. My Twitter handle is V as in Victor, V Lele, four characters of my last name. And I look forward to folks connecting and continuing on the conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. And make sure you check him out and follow his work. He's obviously doing some great stuff and leading the edge. So we love people who lead the edge. Also, please make sure to support our host, TechTarget. Make sure to read my content there, as well as some great research, reporting, and events. Please go to searchcloudcomputing.techtarget.com. So until next time, best of luck in building your cloud computing solutions. We'll be back next week. You guys have a Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, or whatever you're celebrating this time of year.